Now come to order. It's 3:48 on February 25th. We're starting a little bit late. We had a floor session run over, and then the previous committee went over about an hour. With us, we have Representative Josephson, Representative Millett, Representative Sadler, Representative Reinbold, Vice Chair, and Representative Heron. We do have a quorum to conduct business. We have one bill on the agenda today, House Bill 102, Retirement Plans, Roth IRAs, Probate. Those of you that were on the committee last year may remember this bill. I think it died at the end of session, as I recall, didn't it?
In a place that we all know.
Okay, the Burt Locker? No.
I didn't say that.
To present the bill, I think we have Wes Keller and Ernest Prax, and I believe, or both of you, or you can introduce it and turn it over to Ernest. Or
thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee, for hearing the bill. I'm Representative Wes Keller, District 7, Wasilla area. My statement is going to be very, very brief. We have good experts in the back, and you've heard the bill. Some of you have heard the bill over the years. Alaska first modernized the trust laws and the state legislation back in 1997, and we became quite competitive in the U.S., you know, as far as having being a desirable place to draw money in because of the trust laws. Alaska's trust and estate laws have literally impacted millions on us. They bring millions of dollars into the state, and they're not directly state revenue dollars, but they're money in our economic system, and they turn over. And of course, the jobs, related jobs in the trust, bank, insurance industry, legal fields, that kind of thing. So with that, with your permission, Mr. Chair and committee, what I'd like to do is just have Beth Ann Chapman come up here and introduce herself and let her explain the details more of the bill. Okay,
if that's all right.
Dr. Lett Ernest, take a shot at introducement.
I'm sorry, what?
Dr. Lett Ernest. I think it's his first time before the committee.
If the chair would like, Ernest is prepared to go through and tell you what's in the bill.
It's a simple bill.
Yeah. Am I the right one?
It's only 44.
Oh, 44?
Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
For the record, Ernest Prox, staff to Representative Keller. Representative Keller kind of has introduced kind of the general 30,000-foot view of what we're hoping to accomplish, and you know, several of you heard the bill last year, so I won't deliver the speech that I was going to deliver since you've heard it. I just wanted to make one note that we do have, as Representative Keller indicated, Beth Chapman from Faulkner Banfield. She'll be providing kind of the general review of what the bill does and has, if you can answer any specific questions. We also have Jonathan Botmacher here in the room. He flew up from New York State. He and Beth, and also Dave Chaptel, who's calling in from Anchorage, did a majority of the work in drafting this legislation and can answer any details that you may have. And then the final thing is that there is one proposed amendment whenever the chairman deems that proper is to address the...
In about 30 seconds.
Address the drafting error, and that's
like
about it.
I'd ask you to address it as soon as we adopt it.
Okay.
And we do have an amendment, and I would entertain a motion to adopt the amendment for purposes of discussion.
I move amendment 28-LS0335A.1 for discussion.
Seeing no opposition, the amendment is adopted for purposes of discussion. And
okay,
it's about the amendment.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment deletes. It's on page 3, line 3. It deletes AS 3440113 and replaces it with AS 3440118. It's actually just a drafting error. And it relates back to section 43, I believe, in the bill. And that's all this amendment does.
Any comments? Do you remove your adoption of the amendment or the objection? I thought you did. Well, if the amendment's adopted, that's easy enough.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Pardon me? So is this a good time to bring Beth?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah. If Mr. Chairman, if you have Beth come up.
Well, let's open it up to public testimony, and first up will be Beth Chapman. Welcome.
Thank you.
I believe I've seen you here before.
You have. Thank you. My name is Beth Ann Chapman with the law firm of Faulkner Banfield, located here in Juneau. And I'm an attorney that has practiced in the trust and estates area for the past 25 years and have testified on several of these bills, including this bill last year. This bill is very important to continue to allow Alaska to be considered one of the premier states for trust and estates law. It is not only helpful for bringing business into the state, but it keeps assets in the state, particularly for Alaskans. Most of my clients are Alaskans, and we use these laws every day. For the wealthy and for those that may not necessarily be as wealthy as others. Under the sectional analysis, I'll just highlight a few of the issues of what this bill does. It continues to provide and clarify the creditor protection for trusts and retirement plans, which is very essential for individuals, particularly with their retirement accounts. It also provides through sections 9 through 11 improvements to a provision that we have that allows us to modify irrevocable trusts without needing to go to court. And this has given us the ability, the flexibility to respond to changing circumstances within families and keep the overall legal costs lower for these families. Sections 12 through 13 address insurance policies, and Mr. Blotmacher is in a better position than me to explain those provisions to you. Sections 33 through 35 is also another important provision that is going to allow the extension of Uniform Transfers to Minors Act. Many families use these to hold assets for minor children, and they generally terminate anywhere from the ages of 18 to 21. And there may be times where that might not be a good idea. And now a custodian will be able to, if this law is passed, extend that to age 25 in certain circumstances to address substance abuse problems, immaturity, and other issues that maybe young adults might be facing. And Section 36 deals with a new provision that will allow individuals to now leave directions regarding the disposition of their remains. In the past and under current law, you can indicate that you want to be cremated or buried in a particular place, but it's not legally binding, and this can lead to family disputes. I personally have had a client involved in lengthy litigation regarding the burial wishes of a parent, and this provision will now allow individuals to leave directives regarding the disposition of the remains, similar to what they can do for their life-sustaining measures. And with that, I will be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Reinbold.
I've got several questions. The first question you said is it allows Alaska to be premier in regards to this. You also said it brings businesses and keeps assets in the state. Can you give me an example of businesses that it's brought to the state and assets that it's kept in the state?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I will be happy to answer that question. I think as far as my practice, prior to 1997, we would use our trust companies were out of state. So all of my clients would be naming an out-of-state trust company, and then those assets would be custodied outside of Alaska. Now we have several trust companies, and they are located here. And so the assets are remaining in the state, and they have also brought additional business into the state because if you use the Alaska laws, you need to have some of your assets located in the state on deposit with an Alaska bank. And so by doing that, individuals who want to take advantage of the Alaska laws, rather than going offshore, for example, will set up a trust under Alaska law, deposit some funds with an Alaska trust company, because that's a requirement, that he must be an Alaska trust company.
Hello?
Okay, so is there any new business in particular? Can you name, I don't know if you're comfortable, but what are we talking about? What kind of assets? Is it millions of dollars worth of assets? What kind of new businesses has it brought to the state?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I think Mr. Botmacher is better suited to answer that. But as far as my own particular clients, I can tell you that it has been multiples of millions of dollars that have stayed in Alaska, tens and tens of millions of dollars. And that's just with my clients. The Alaska Trust Company is here, and I think they are better suited to answer what it has done for their business.
Any further questions? Representative Herron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Beth, is, of course, who benefits besides the customer who brings or keeps your assets in banks here in Alaska or brings them to Alaska? Who else benefits from this law?
Through the chair, Representative Herron, clearly the clients who are using the laws are benefiting, as well as the employees of the various trust companies and banks that are now offering those trust services, and other professionals, whether they be accountants or lawyers, any financial planners that are involved in the financial planning area.
So whether I have a constituent that has deposits in local banks or I don't, what's the advantage for the state to have this law?
Through the chair, Representative Herron, the advantage for the state is that it has allowed businesses to grow, particularly in the trust area, trust companies who employ employees, and allows them to offer these services, and with insurance policies that are being issued under the Alaska law, of course, there is the state is getting the premium tax on those policies as well as they are brought into the state. So it's really the banks that where the assets are custodied, they're getting increased deposits. I believe there's a letter from the president of Northrum Bank indicating how it has affected his business. And for the constituents, the Alaskans, which are really my clients, they're benefiting because they are now able to do some planning and be able to use Alaska law and know that the courts in their state are going to govern if there's any issues regarding these trusts.
Mr. Chairman, a couple more questions.
Follow-up? Or a new question?
Beth, when we get to the state of Alaska, we get a tax. Do you know what kind of money are we talking about?
Representative Herron, through the chair, I do not directly, but I do believe Mr. Douglas Blotmacher would know the answer.
So in reading the sponsors, and then we used to be number one. We're no longer number one?
Through the chair, Representative Herron, that is correct. We are getting quite a bit of competition from Delaware and South Dakota and Nevada, and they are constantly trying to replicate and one up on these laws so that they can get the business because it's just a continuing growing field.
So, Mr. Chairman, on that point, is if we used to be number one and other states are, there must be lowering their tax, is it beneficial us to compete with them and lower our tax so that we're back to number one, or is there a point of diminishing returns?
Representative Herron, through the chair, I will. I believe Mr. Douglas Botmacher would be in a better position to talk about the premium tax than I am.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll reserve those questions.
Representative Reinbold.
Okay. Just piggybacking on his, it says you've had Delaware, South Dakota. We've got a lot of competition. How are these other states benefiting from their amended laws, and why do we need to amend our laws again right now?
Representative Reinbold, through the chair, they are benefiting because as the assets are deposited in those states, they're receiving the banking deposits, which is increasing the bank's capital. That's always what banks like, is increased capital. The trust companies are charging fees, and their employees, they employ more employees. And by amending our laws, we are going to be able to go back out and say we still have the best laws in the United States, and that the trust should be kept in Alaska, so that our trust companies and their employees and banks will benefit.
New question?
Well, in regards to that, kind of a piggy bank still, is this money just being deposited, or is it actually being circulated in our economy?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, when the monies are deposited at a bank, that it gives them the ability through their capital, it increases their capital, they're going to be able to lend it out. So, yes, it is being circulated in the state.
Representative Josephson.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, and Ms. Chapman, I'm an attorney, but I've only sort of dabbled in Title 13. I tried to stay away from it, with one glaring exception. But the one question I have is, I know that, for example, Delaware is notorious for its friendly corporate statute, so that people incorporate there and they don't really do any business there, but they use Delaware as a conduit to do their business. Can that happen here? Can people set up their estates in Alaska, even though they don't really have business in Alaska? Can an individual set up an estate here?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, the Alaska requirements do require that there be some assets located in the state of Alaska, rather than just allowing it to be the law to be used.
And just as a follow-up, I can think of, what is your opinion of that? That there must be some nexus with Alaska. Is that necessary? Is that good, bad?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I think it's very good. I think that it helps strengthen any jurisdictional questions.
Okay.
That may come up if there's a conflict of law question that between two competing states or two competing courts. Okay. It makes it more real. You know, it's a connection that I think is necessary.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Better? Representative Millen?
Okay.
Please continue, or you're done.
No, I'm done, unless you have any other questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I guess it's time to bring up Mr. Blottmeyer. Please join us. I think I probably butchered your name.
That's all right, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jonathan Blottmacher.
I left out a syllable.
And it's an honor, Mr. Chairman and representatives, for me to be here before you again. I've been the major protagonist of this. I'm a member of the Alaska, California, and New York bars, and with my brother Doug, who's been up here for about 40 years in the trust industry, tried to get a bill passed, which did a lot.
Can you state your firm for the record as well?
I'm the director of estate planning for the Alaska Trust Company.
Oh.
And I do many other things as well. And when this law was passed in 1997, it got tremendously positive publicity. But as Representative Herron and Representative Reingold indicated, other states jumped on board. Delaware passed its version of our law within 30 days. Fortunately for us, it was not as good a law. But other states, there are about 15 or 16 now, have tried to jump on board. And it's been very, very good for all the states. In fact, a Harvard law professor named Robert Sitkoff has written an article that came out about 3 years ago pointing out that states that have passed these kind of statutes have increased their commerce in the trust and related industries. And in summary, Alaska, I believe, gets four benefits. Number one, it's great laws for people in the state of Alaska, and many more Alaskans, as Beth was indicating, have used these laws than people from outside. Second, it stopped the transfer of funds outside of the United States, outside of the jurisdiction of the IRS and the federal courts, bringing it back here to the United States. So there's greater safeguard for people. If someone tried to create a trust to defraud a creditor, the American courts have jurisdiction over it, and they can undo a wrong. And I came up with this idea because I read in the middle 90s that over $400 billion had left the United States to little offshore countries, some of which you can't find on a map, like Vanuatu. And it's really been great. We now have about 15 or 16 states that are competitors, and we're back here to put Alaska number one. Another benefit the state gets is state premium tax. Well, my understanding is the state has received millions of dollars of tax on life insurance premiums that probably no one in America would have gotten, because these large policies are very often structured in Bermuda, where there is no such tax. And now, by imposing a tiny tax, but on very, very large sums of money, we now get those taxes for free in Alaska, and it doesn't cost the state anything, because they can get the base of the insurance here in Alaska by using, for example, an Alaska trust, and it's been very popular. The only state that's a competitor with us on that is South Dakota. In fact, South Dakota has dropped its premium tax on these very large premiums by a tiny margin compared to Alaska, but we're still, as far as I know, getting most of the business. But that's been very good for the state of Alaska. As Beth indicated, there's also been tens of millions of dollars that have been deposited in institutions such as banks here in Alaska that otherwise wouldn't be here. And that provides banks like Northrim Bank and others the opportunity to have capital to loan to Alaska businesses and Alaska homeowners and others. And I think it really helps the economy in that way. We view this as just a tremendous win for the state of Alaska, and we believe this bill will put us a number one again. Some of the rankings, they put states like South Dakota and Nevada ahead of us now, even though for a long time we were number one, and we want to make Alaska number one again, and we believe this bill will help us get there.
Representative Reinbold, followed by Representative Perrin.
I've got several questions. First of all, the new businesses in Alaska, I understand the deposits. I understand that the banks can loan more money, but is there any specific businesses, I mean, other than possibly attorneys? I'm not sure what businesses directly, new businesses, have directly been impacted by this.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold. The Alaska Trust Company, for example, which employs about a dozen people, didn't exist until the 97 legislation was passed. And the Aleut Corporation backed the formation of the Alaska Trust Company. Also, there's another trust company I just found out called Allen Trust. I met Mr. Allen down in Oregon about a month ago when I was lecturing there for the local attorneys and accountants, and they're now going to open up a trust facility here. Yes, the lawyers have certainly benefited, and the paralegals and the accountants. Very often people have to prepare tax returns, and sometimes they tell the Alaska Trust Company or another trust institution who in Alaska would be a good accountant to use. There's also been sales of life insurance policies by Alaska life insurance agents who have been here. So we think it's many, many jobs that have been created and maintained in their relatively high-paying managerial level jobs for Alaskans.
Yeah, I'd like to let the committee know that we've got Brett Kolb, the director of the Division of Insurance, in the room, and he'll be speaking shortly on any insurance questions that we have related to life insurance premiums or taxes or both. Please continue.
Okay, so what my question is by changing this law, are we going to be much more attractive, it sounds like? We won't be losing any potential business. It's only an upswing for the state. And the second half of the question is, who collects this tax, and does it come to the state general fund?
Brett does.
Okay.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I don't know what division gets the money, but I'm sure the commissioner can tell us who collects it. But it goes into state revenues that it gets. And on your question, will this keep business here, bring more business in? I know it will. I had a very large estate planning practice, and I don't think I'm exaggerating to say I had at least 300 clients, some of whom were very wealthy and have names all of us would know, who decided to use Alaska laws for their estate planning. one of the wealthiest Americans who died 2 years ago directed for his will to be admitted to probate in the state of Alaska, and that's provided work for people in the state of Alaska. So through the years, you have done a wonderful job of passing great laws in our state to make it really the most attractive place to do estate planning. But the other states are now very jealous of that, and they're trying to attract business there. And this, I think, will hope keep us on top. In fact, Ms. Chapman and Dave Schaftel and I planned, if this bill passes, to write a major article for the estate planning community telling them that we were even better than we were before and we're better than everybody else. And we think that'll bring a lot of business to the state. It's not just deposits and taxes, it's jobs as well. I think it's a triple-head winner for the state.
You got another one?
Well, I have a question for the gentleman in the back, the commissioner.
No, he'll be coming up shortly, but any further questions for Mr.
Blotmacher?
Blotmacher. As my committee will attest, I've been really challenged by names the last couple of weeks. Representative Herron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jonathan, is probably the same question I posed to Beth is we're not number one, and there's a lot of these tweaks that we're going to make in the law that will do it, but let's just use the premium tax income as an example. So South Dakota has a very small, lesser tax than we do. But so what if we were to say, well, let's go lower than South Dakota? Is what kind of revenue could we be talking about? And is there a point of diminishing returns of reducing our rate to be quote-unquote number one?
Through the chair, Representative Herron, I think that's a great question. And I don't know. About a month ago, I met with some of the lawyers and bankers from South Dakota who told me their state is now getting quite a bit in premium tax because they're at what the bankers call 8 basis points, which is 0.8%, instead of 10 basis points, which is where Alaska is. I think it would be helpful to lower it. I would only lower it to meet South Dakota. I would not make it a race to the bottom. When they first changed their law a couple of years ago, I called some of the investment bankers in New York who were putting the policies through foreign places, whether it was Bermuda or Alaska or South Dakota. Most of them said that they really didn't think this tiny 0.02% would make a difference. But we've since learned that some of the people who are actually paying the premiums say, if I can save $5,000 by going to South Dakota, why wouldn't I save $5,000? Again, I think that's the odd case, and we did not propose that, but that might be a good thing to do to just meet South Dakota. And by the way, through the chair, Representative Herron, when we said Alaska was not number one anymore, it's not on the state premium tax. South Dakota and Alaska is the only one. It's in the rankings by independent groups of who has the best laws to do your trust business. And people can disagree on that, but a number of these agencies have said that they think that either South Dakota or Nevada is better. But we can now make Alaska back to be number one. And again, passing those laws doesn't cost the state anything. It keeps jobs here. I think in the long run it will create new jobs. It provides revenue for the state, and it provides capital in Alaskan banks. In fact, when we first drafted the law, we insisted that you had to have an Alaska trustee and you had to deposit money in the state of Alaska because we really wanted Alaska to benefit, not just people from outside. And as Beth said, more Alaskans have used these laws to their benefit than any other state. And I think this new law, if it passes, will provide a lot more money coming into the state, especially in the way of individual retirement accounts.
Follow-up? New question?
Mr. Chairman, is there bankers that will be testifying today?
I thought we had one, but apparently do we? Pardon me?
There's
a letter in the
from Joe Beadle.
Yeah, Northrim, Joe Beadle.
But he's not online.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess there is just maybe more of a, is that, of course, this efforts to pass these kind of laws has been going on for a while. Didn't during the Knowles administration, the governor veto this kind of law?
When the bill, through the chair, Representative Herring, when the bill was first passed, and I believe it was unanimously on 96, the governor was told it could hurt banks in the state of Alaska, and he therefore vetoed it. The next year, we were told that the banks no longer objected. They really thought it was good for Alaska, and they assisted us in getting it passed. So it was an unfortunate misunderstanding.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Josephson.
Well, I guess this is, thank you, Mr. Chairman, more of an academic sort of curiosity, that for an Alaskan to instead opt to open their trust and go through probate in South Dakota, wouldn't they need a raise or some asset or property in South Dakota? I mean, wouldn't there be the same jurisdictional question?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, that's a great question. I think I can be either thanked or blamed for doing forum shopping for trusts. In fact, I was the first lawyer, I believe, at least I was told this by Citibank South Dakota, to begin using South Dakota trusts. And I did that before we got the legislation passed in Alaska. But I'd call up a South Dakota lawyer and I'd say, do I need a South Dakota trustee in order to use South Dakota law? And they'd say, we don't know. And I'd say, do I have to put any money in the state? And I'd get an answer, we don't know. So when we prepared the Alaska legislation, we made it very, very clear you have to have an Alaska trustee and you have to deposit assets in Alaska, and part of the administration of the trust or the estate has to occur in the state. Most of the states, believe it or not, that have passed similar legislation don't have those nexus or connection laws as well defined as we do. And I've used that with my clients saying, I don't care where you have your trust located, but we think that the Alaska law gives you greater certainty you're going to be here and you get the benefit of the Alaska laws.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Brett Kolb.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome back.
Thank you, Chairman. For the record, my name is Brett Kolb. I'm the director with the Division of Insurance. I'm available for questions.
Representative Reinbold, followed by Representative Herron.
Okay, you got a heads up. I'm going to ask the same question. Who collects the tax, and does it come into the general fund? And if so, about how much money does the state get from this?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold. The tax is collected by the Division of Insurance. It does then go to the general fund, to answer your questions. As far as a specific number, one of the challenges we've been having as we've been looking at this is finding granular enough data. I can tell you how much premium tax we collect, which is on an annual basis approximately $58 million, but that is all premium tax. That is much broader than just trust-related tax, and I'm having trouble getting granular enough data. It's not reported to us with that level of specificity for me to break that down at this time.
Is there any hope through the chair if we're allowed to do this? I mean, if you're going to be able to do this, I mean, the numbers would be really, really nice to see, especially if we're going to be changing. You know, there's a lot of bold in this law. It just seems like we want to see if the state's benefiting, other than, and granted, I'm thrilled if the private sector is benefiting. But I would like to know if the state, you know, is also benefiting. And when they say there's tens of millions of dollars being deposited here, where's that money coming from? Is it coming from the premium taxes? Is it coming, you know, where's this money coming from? Is it from Alaskans? Is it from outsiders? Where the heck is this money coming from?
Representative Reinbold, through the chair. A lot of that I can't speak to because the deposits are on the trust side, which is not the insurance portion of it. So where the money that's being put into the trust, I would not have that answer because it's not in the Division of Insurance. The premium tax portion of it, as I said, that's the part. And of this entire bill, I believe there's three sections that even go into the insurance portion of it, and one of them being the premium tax. So as far as where money is coming from and who is depositing it into the trust, I wouldn't have that information.
Okay. And is a follow-up?
Yeah.
I guess what I'm trying to ask you as well is there a way that you can get the data about trusts? I mean, it seems like not too difficult of a question. I mean, you know, to figure out how much the state's getting, you'd think the state would care where they're getting their money, so.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold. That's one thing that we are looking at is there a way to get more granular data? When we get a reporting or we get a premium payment, it's in a large number, and it's having to get down to that seriatim or that policy-by-policy information in order to determine this was that type of policy, this was a different type of policy, and right now we don't have that. It is something that I'm interested in gathering because I do believe it is helpful information.
And on that point, if I'm reading it right, it only impacts policies that are in excess of $100,000?
That's correct.
And I can't believe there, I mean, you have an idea on how many that is? Is that like hundreds or dozens? Or?
At this point, again, I cannot get that level of information. That's a good question. Right now, as the law is written, it is specific to single policies, I believe is the way that section of Section M is written, is related to single policies, and this would broaden it out to allow group policies, as I understand the way it's drafted.
Representative Barron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Same question that I had for Jonathan is, you know, the plan is to pass a comprehensive package of small improvements to make ourselves as attractive as possible. Does it make any sense to play around with the premium tax that we get now? Should we drop it to South Dakota's rate, or should we just leave it alone? I guess we just need to know, does it make sense?
Representative Herron, through the chair. I did play around with the numbers just to get an idea. $100 million in premium will result in about $102,000 in premium tax, to put it in an order of magnitude. Now, if you took that and changed it from 0.1 to 0.08 or tried to match another, I think the impact would be relatively insignificant in the amount of less premium tax that you would gather. And if that enhance the environment, it may be a helpful thing.
So, Mr. Chairman, so I guess what you're saying is that we may lose a couple of customers, but as long as the rest of the package for being attractive to placing your trust in our trust, so to speak, is the formula that we're using now is probably not as important as the rest of these tweaks.
Representative Herron, through the chair. Not sure if I followed the question there. I apologize for that.
We're trying to make some improvements to the program, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they're small.
Right.
We're trying to make our thing attractive. By changing the rate, is that going to make it less attractive for a couple of customers? Is that what you're saying? Because some customers would want to save that $5,000 or $10,000 that Jonathan was talking about, the difference between South Dakota and Alaska.
Through the chair, Representative Herron, I don't see how it would make it less attractive by lowering the percentage, the premium tax portion of it. That would essentially lower slightly the premium tax collected by the state, but it would in turn be less premium tax that a company was having to pay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Has the administration taken a position on this bill?
We're neutral on this.
Neutral? Neutral can be good. Any further questions for the commissioner? Thanks again, Brett.
Thank you.
We also have some people online. Brenda Nation, are you with us?
Mr. Chairman, hi. Brenda Nation with the American Council of Life Insurers.
Oh, thank you for joining us today. Please continue.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to testify via teleconference. I'm based in Austin, Texas, and it's a little hard for me to get to Juneau on short notice, so thanks again. I don't know if my comments that were sent in an email made it to you, Mr. Chair, and the committee members.
Yeah, yes, they did.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, first of all, the American Council of Life Insurers is a national trade association that represents the life insurance industry. And so our interest in this House Bill 102 is more reflective on where the insurable interest statutes are being amended or changed in the insurance code in Alaska. We worked very closely with the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws, they're otherwise known as NACUSL, on changes to the Uniform Trust Code with respect to insurable interest. I think there were some documents that I also provided from NACUSL along with my email that I hope made it to you and the committee members. When we talk about the trust laws, and I heard several times today testimony that folks want to make Alaska the best trust laws in the state, and they want greater certainty in the laws. Well, with respect to Section 39 of the bill, it looks to us like everything was followed with respect to making the NACUSL amendments to the Uniform Trust Code mirrored into the Alaska law, to which we would support Section 39 of the bill. But with respect to Section 38, which is the longstanding insurable interest law in Alaska, there's been a phrase added to that section that, in our opinion, would actually make the laws less certain with respect to insurable interest and life insurance that is purchased by or for trust. And that's that language that was added on page 36 of the bill that I have before me, line 3, that adds that the insurable interest is at the time the contract was made, and then they've added the language or immediately after the contract was made. It's a longstanding principle that insurable interest exists at the time of the contract, not any time afterwards. When you say or immediately after the contract is made, how do you define that? Is it 2 seconds after? Is it 30 minutes after? Is it 30 days after? And I'll be happy to explain insurable interest if the committee members and Mr. Chair, you would like me to do so.
Certainly.
I want to take up the committee. Would you like me to?
Yes, please.
And Mr.
Chair, insurable interest is something that is needed in order for one person or one entity to take out a life insurance policy on another person. Long-standing principles of law, you want whoever's going to be the beneficiary of your life insurance policy to want you to live a long time. You don't want them to seek out your early demise, if you will, just to collect the money. I mean, that's the whole principle of taking out life insurance, is in case your family, loved ones, your business partner, your company, someone is relying on you to stay alive, to provide economic benefit, to provide love and affection to them, and so forth. And so every state, every jurisdiction has an insurable interest law that says that insurable interest has to exist at the time the contract was made. So that's the turning point as to whether you have a valid life insurance contract. So in our opinion, by adding that or immediately after the contract was made, puts into question whether insurable interest actually exists and is it a valid life insurance policy. And it could cause problems with whether or not it is a valid insurance contract in order for the beneficiary to collect. And so for those reasons, we would say leave Section 38, the current insurable interest law, in subsection, I think it's A, subsection A, don't make any changes there. The law's clear. Folks know what that means. And we're good the way it is. To add that language, that's going to create uncertainty in Alaska law. And then the third section that I mentioned in our comments is section 13 of the bill, trustee duties relating to insurance. We've had a little back and forth between Representative Keller's office and our folks as far as the comments that we previously provided, and it was pointed out to us that a similar type statute was passed in Florida. It appears that Alaska is following what Florida law proposed back in 2010, and it was enacted there. And so I would withdraw the comments that we made to Section 13. I believe it takes care of the concerns that I raised in our comments. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Josephson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, and just to confirm, the witness is Brendan Nation from Austin, Texas. Is that who I'm?
Brendan Nation.
Yes.
Okay.
Brendan Nation, American Council of Life Insurers.
All right. And so, on behalf of the American Council, Ms. Nation, this is Representative Josephson. Your group is content with this, with the exception of Section 38. Is that what you just said?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes. We have no real interest in the balance of this bill. I realize it's quite lengthy and mostly dealing with trust. Our concerns were with Section 38 of the bill dealing with insurable interest.
What if I could follow up? Have you ever seen any language like page 36, line 3, the or immediately after the contract was made? Have you ever seen that before in any context?
Not in the context of true insurable interest. I have seen proposals by folks in the secondary market, which it's the life settlements industry, where they've attempted to try to change certain state insurable interest laws to provide for what we call sell-to-settle policies, where they entice a senior into taking out a large life insurance policy with a promise of, if you allow us to take out life insurance on you, then we will give you a cruise to the Bahamas, to $1,000, you know, different types of incentives, basically to let them use their insurability to take out a life insurance policy to sell it to a secondary market investor.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Herron.
Ms. Nation, so you're testifying that in Section 38 of this proposed legislation, we just not make these changes. So, Mr. Chairman, who can testify that would like to have these changes? Can we get their rationale as well?
Come on back.
Yes, this is Jonathan Blotmacher again, and I was the one who drafted this, and I'm not going to comment on all that Ms. Nation said, but I will address this one change we wanted to make clear. We felt this helped to clarify the law, but Ms. Nation says, well, when you say immediately after, that could be 5 months. Although I think that is not a sustainable position, what I've done is to suggest we change it so it says immediately upon the contract being made, or words to that effect. So Ms. Nation doesn't have to worry that it could be even a millisecond after the policy is issued. One of the reasons to do that is she is correct. You want to make sure that your law doesn't encourage murder. There are Supreme Court cases which state that the states could overcome the right to contract. This goes back to the 1800s. One of the leading decisions is by Justice Holmes, where he said we have to balance people's right to make contracts and the right to keep people from being murdered. So they said as long as you have an interest in making sure that that person lives rather than benefiting if that person dies, then that policy has to be issued. And I don't think Miss Nation will disagree with that. Sometimes policies of insurance have an annuity feature. And if I own an annuity on the life of someone, I very much want them to live. I don't want them to die. So, and these are often embedded in policies. And yet you may not really have a full insurable interest until that annuity part of the policy is issued. And what we want to make absolutely clear is that if your insurable interest is there as of the moment the policy is issued, then you should be deemed to have an insurable interest. And I want to assure Ms. Nation that this proposal I made had nothing to do with what she regards as a greater threat to America than the Black Page, which is that secondary life insurance market, which the industry has been against. It's called stranger-owned life insurance, or STOLI. This in no way promotes stranger-owned life insurance. She had concern about that under the Florida bill, but I spent the weekend spending a lot of time talking to the lawyers who drafted it and found out that Miss Nation and her colleagues had been there when this bill was drafted and passed in Florida. And yet she came back and said we shouldn't do it in Alaska. And now she has backed off again and said, okay, we won't oppose that.
But this personal attacks.
But this proposal that we've made, just to say, and we'll change the language so she doesn't have to worry that it's after the policy is issued, it'll be immediately when the contract is made.
What is the difference between that and when the contract is made and immediately upon? There's no time in between them. They're the same, so why do we need it?
Well, we needed to make sure that if you have an interest which arises at the time the policy is issued, that you'd be deemed to have an insurable interest because you want to make sure that that person continues to live.
Why wouldn't you change it before you completed the contract? I can't see how that, in fact, if I could get Commissioner back up. Brett, will you join us for a minute?
I agree with you.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
For the record, Brett Kolb, Director of the Division of Insurance.
Do you see any purpose for those words, even amended? Starting with or, all the new verbiage starting with or through made.
So, at the time the contract was made.
Even with immediately upon instead of after.
It does seem redundant, by my read. Again, not being a lawyer, and the words may have more meaning, but it appears to say the same thing.
Mr. Chairman, the reason this came up is I spoke to people in New York who develop what are known as private placement life insurance policies, which are the very large policies that are now coming through the state of Alaska and upon which Alaska gets the premium tax. And they said they wanted a clarification on this. And they felt that the language immediately after was good enough because it meant immediately after. But I can't prove that there isn't a time between when the policy is issued and immediately thereafter. So in order to satisfy the people who want to send these policies through the state of Alaska, we're now suggesting it say immediately when the contract is made. And I think that addresses the concerns that Ms. Nation has mentioned.
I know there are several people on the committee that are concerned, and for that reason I'm going to be holding the bill over and zipping it over to our legal department and getting an independent opinion, but I'm not feeling comfortable with it at all with this verbiage. I see no purpose for it, and I do have an insurance background. Typically, if you don't need it, you don't put it in, and I think we're probably missing something on this, or possibly missing something on this, and it would be my choice either to gut it right out, take it out completely right now, or wait till we can get our legal people to look at it. And with that, I will adjourn at 4:45.